What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Clancy Rogers, aka Anonymous BTB, hodling artist, truther, 3D printing, Second Amendment, trolling queen, Citadel 21 US, It's Bitcoin or Communism, author of What Happens When Walmart Buys $1 Billion of Bitcoin, which was recently published in Bitcoin Magazine. Clancy Rogers, welcome to the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. How are you?
Hey, Seth, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Sure. What's up? It's great to have you here. How are things going by you?
Well, we are at the beach right now. We've made it to Freedom Land. We made it to Florida. So we are happy to be out of our house because we were locked up there for 2 years. Felt like 2 years.
Sure. Well, I'd love to get into some of what's been going on over the last 2 years. But first, I want to hear a little bit more about you and how you got to Bitcoin and more about maybe, and we could even start with like your art. And what your art means to you, and what kind of art you're doing these days.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so how we got into Bitcoin, I can start with that.
Sure.
Well, my husband, Joe Rogers, he actually just is super technical. And I mean, let me just start with this. I'll just tell you the real story. So in 2013, we had our first child. And funny story. So he had just gotten this private cloud set up and he was so proud of it. And we put all of our pictures on it. We put all our wedding pictures on it. And we just had our newborn and we had all her pictures taken. And he put all those on there. And he was excited to go back home and be able to access them all. You know, it's just a little, you know, project he had. So he left the ports open on our private cloud. So we were living in Texas and we went back home to Arkansas and he left it open so he could access it and show all of our friends and family, all the pictures. And we get back home and a couple of days later, he comes to me and he's like, okay, I got to tell you something, but you can't get mad at me. So of course I know, you know, what the hell is he about to say? And I'm going to be mad, whatever he's going to, you know, if he has to come to me like that. And so I'm like, okay, what is it? He said, so someone hacked our server. And he no longer have access to any of our pictures. And of course, they weren't backed up. Nothing was backed up. Mm. And so I'm like, okay, I don't understand. They're just on the computer, right? He's like, no, I dumped them all into our cloud and someone hacked it. And now they're saying that we have to pay them or they won't give us our pictures back. And I'm like, well, what do you mean pay them? Like, how much? Like, I'm freaking out. My kid is like 2 weeks old. And he's like, well, they want us to pay him in Bitcoin. And I'm like, what the I don't know if I can cuss on
you. Yeah, you can.
Okay. I'm like, what the fuck is Bitcoin? And he's like, he's trying to explain to you. It's like a digital currency. It's like money. It's like internet money. And he already, you know, had an idea of what it was, but he wasn't deep into it. And so I'm like, well, I don't give a shit how much it is. Like, these are our wedding photos. I'm hormonal. These are our newborn babies pictures. So I'm losing my mind. So he's like, okay. So he figures it out. He has to study and figure out how to like get on, you know, get how to obtain Bitcoin. So he gets some. And so he ends up getting the pictures back, right? Because I'm losing my mind. Right. And I'm like, I don't care how much it is, just pay it.
Sure.
So that's 2013. And then, you know, we like had some on an exchange and didn't really think about it anymore. And then 2017 market hit and he's like, oh my God, babe, we have Bitcoin. Oh my God. He's like, I just had it left over. It was just sitting there and we'd never done anything about it. And Joe has always been, you know, hardcore libertarian. Like he fucking hates the state and he is, you know, down that rabbit hole. So in 2017, he really, you know, when the bull market hit, then he really dove deep into it. And then he like went and got like some miners and started getting that. And I'm just like, yeah, whatever. It's, you know, I wasn't interested. And I was going through like some really bad health issues. And so I like wasn't paying attention to it at all. that we had our other kid and everything. And then, but just gradually through the years, you know, like I'm like more like conspiracy theorist and all on that side of things. And I fucking hate the state too. So just in a different way and from a different angle and different experiences. So that's literally how we got into Bitcoin, is because he left the ports open on our private cloud. And I was so fucking pissed. And thank God for the hackers, because that's why we were, you know, holding Bitcoin. And that's why really why he looked into it, because he was like, oh God, it, you know, the price was pumping. He was like, what am I doing with all this? So he actually got into it. And then, you know, he got on, found Bitcoin Twitter and got totally orange pilled. And once he was totally orange pilled, he totally orange pilled me. So that, cool. And then that's kind of history. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm holy shit. I can't believe did you get the pictures back?
Yeah, we got the pictures back, because I lost my mind. I'm like hormonal. My kid's 2 weeks old. I'm like, you lost our fucking newborn pictures. Are you out of your mind? You know, I don't care. I didn't care what it was. At that moment, I was like, our wedding pictures and our newborn baby pictures. He had just not backed up, and you know, just a mistake.
Sure.
Just a newbie.
I can't believe they actually, I mean, you send them the Bitcoin or whatnot, you know, whatever amount in Satoshis it is, and they actually send the pictures back though, or release or give you, you know, access to your pictures back, which is what amazes me.
That right. I don't really know.
Honor and code here.
Right. I don't really know. Like, I don't know the details of it. All I know is I was like, you take care of this.
Sure.
Yeah. When I walk back in here, I want our pictures. And so I don't really, you know, I'd have to ask him like the details of it. Because I didn't, you know, I really didn't understand it back then. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like I didn't even understand the idea of it. You know, it took me forever to wrap my mind around what it was.
Right. So, and what was that journey like, wrapping your mind around what it was and
what things
spoke to you?
Well, at first it was really annoying because it's all you would talk about. And if anyone is out there in a relationship with a Bitcoiner and you don't understand it, it's the worst fucking thing ever. Like, it is the most obnoxious thing. So he would, but I, you know, like, he was in IT. He worked for Hewlett Packard for 10 years. He was in like, you know, he was in sales. He was a sales guy for like big data centers. And I worked for Hewlett Packard for a little bit. So, you know, technically I'm not super technical, but you know, I could keep up with what was happening, what was understanding. And, but for him to explain to me like how the blockchain worked and everything, it took me like a few years, and it was just me listening to him talk constantly. So it, and my journey came from fuck the state. Like, right. I came from like a different angle. Like, I, you know, woke, I had like a complete ego death. I went through like a really big, deep, dark depression and went like through it. I went through a bunch of health issues. And when I went through it, you know, it's just, you know, when you wake up, you see everything. It's like, you can't unsee it. And once you see that, like, and then that, you know, me and Joe's, you know, we were parallel. Like, I'm like, fuck the state. And he's like, fuck the state. But look, I found this solution. And so when we finally, when he got me on the same page as him technically, and I understood what it meant, you know, it's freedom, and you can't unsee the light. So it was like, we were on parallel roads, but it took me a while once I wrapped my mind around it and understood it, because I'm not a technical person. But once I understood the technology, that's when things started to click for me.
Sure.
So that took me probably like four, it probably took me like four solid years, honestly.
Mm, that makes sense. I think it takes most of us at least that long. Where do you, you know, have you always been an artist?
Go ahead.
Yeah. Have you always been an artist, and has your art changed with Bitcoin, or is it more or less, you know, Bitcoin has just been embedded into your art?
No, it has absolutely changed with Bitcoin. I've always been an artist. I was like an art minor in school, and just a traditional like watercolor or acrylics, or, you know, I love being creative and crafty, and I love painting. It was just like, I think a year ago, Mother's Day, I haven't even been a digital artist for a year. Joe bought me an iPad Pro for Mother's Day. Mm. And he's like, look, you could do some art on this. And so I just started like messing around with it and memeing, and super amateur, trying to figure it out. And then I just got into memeing because it was so fun and easy. He's all big on like you know, we're memeing Bitcoin to the moon. So he's like, you're fucking changing the world one meme at a time. And he's like, you know, pumping behind me, wanting me to do memes constantly. So it really, I went from, my mom hates it. Oh my God. My mom's like super traditional and wants me to do like traditional oil paintings of landscapes all day. And here I am drawing pictures of like, you know, girls with titties right. and laces coming off their titties. So yeah, it's totally new. This is like totally a new thing for me, but it's fun and I love it. And it does make sense. I mean, memes are the future, so.
Sure. In terms of the toxicity and the trolling, I feel you really capture the zeitgeist of what I'm going to say is maybe the other side of the coin right now. So there's, you know, maybe the mainstream narrative, and I think sort of the other narratives. And I think you really capture well sort of the feeling of maybe those other narratives. And, yes. and what do you think it is about trolling or being toxic? And do you think there's enough toxicity right now?
Okay, so the other side of the coin, I like how you put that, because I was like such a basic bitch. You know, like before I found Bitcoin and before I had like, you know, an ego death and this, like what I call like my little mini awakening or however you want to phrase it. Sure. I was, you know, total, like I was like shopping addict. I was, you know, had a huge social life. I was in a sorority. I was raised super traditionally. You know, I was like basic bitch maximalist. Right. So this is like a complete flip for me, like to be on the other side of this. And it's shocking to people that like when I am toxic to like normies, you know, right? Like
right.
on Facebook, people, you know, because people, nobody hears it. I think, okay, so to answer one of your questions, I think that there's not enough toxicity because, but it's just a product of this whole like cancel culture bullshit that's happening. So everyone's just scared to be honest and scared to say their feelings because, you know, like I have like, you know, I kind of have like a fuck you status, you know, I don't like have a job at a corporation that I have to watch my reputation about, you know, I'm a stay at home mom. My husband works for Bitcoin Magazine. And so it's like, you know, encouraged to be toxic. So I have this status where I have this ability to be able to speak my mind openly and not be canceled. Like who the fuck's going to cancel me? My friends, but my friends that are friends with me know me well enough to know that I'm have good intentions and I'm not ever, you know, just rude to be rude. But I think that it's just a product of fiat, you know, like fiat feeds this fucking cancel culture. And then everyone is just scared to say anything. So I am this unicorn that is like, oh my God, look at this logic and knowledge, you know, just like anyone on Bitcoin Twitter is. So no, absolutely not. That's why everyone fucking cries about how mean and scary and harsh, you know, maximalists are on Twitter, because no one's used to the truth and everyone's so used to tiptoeing around everything to be politically correct that no, it just doesn't exist anymore. So I think some people think it's refreshing. Like me, I thrive off of the maximalists that are toxic as fuck. Cause I'm like, this is so refreshing, especially now. I'm just so sick of hearing everyone just spit bullshit from talking heads on the TV, you know, like look into what's happening and like speak truth. So no, it's nowhere. It's literally nowhere. No one speaks the truth. And I have people like you, okay. Like you and me, we have these Facebook accounts, right? So I started shitposting on Facebook and people know I'll get like 5 likes on a really toxic post about like, I don't know, COVID or some mask bullshit or whatever. And then I'll get a flood of people in my inbox. I'll get like 10 messages from people I know in my inbox, like, oh my God, yes. Or they'll send me links to shit or like, yeah, I feel the same way. I'm like, or I can't believe you just said that on there. And I'm like, what in the hell is going on? All these people feel the same way. They don't know it because no one's saying anything. And they're all messaging me because I'm the only one who's saying something. So it's so messed up. I believe in like a silent majority of people that know how fucked up the world is, but no one's saying anything. They're just sitting there, just scratching their asses, not doing anything about it. So I messaged everyone back. I'm like, why don't you just comment that on my photo? You know, like, stop messaging me. You're annoying.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. So maybe not the person who's come across your tweets or your Facebook status or that sort of message, but maybe, you know, someone who is similar to your former self, you know, who's basic, but hasn't come across any messaging yet. Do you have any empathy for that person who might go on that journey? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't know what you don't know. But that's why being toxic is so important. In the right kind of toxic. I wrote this tweet thread once about being like the right kind of toxic. You know, like be, and the basis of it was be toxic towards the darkness. Be toxic towards the people that are keeping everyone so suppressed. Say things that people wonder, like, wait, what is she talking about? Why are they saying that? Don't say things just to be rude. And that's a big difference. And if someone comes in, you know, really what's happening is maximalists on Twitter are being, quote, toxic. And really, they're just holding people accountable, and people are just titty babies and getting their fucking feelings because, you know, someone hurt their feelings on what they said. But there's a difference between holding someone accountable and being honest and toxic, and then just bullying someone just to be rude. So absolutely. You know, if like my friends will say something, and I'll say masks or something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but what are you talking about? Like, there's nothing out. There's all these studies saying that they don't work. Like, it's a basic, the CDC is like, they don't work. Right. And my friends will just be like, what? And I'm like, well, you just don't even look into it, you know? And so you have to be patient to a certain extent. You know, you have to, it's a fine line that you're walking. So yeah, absolutely. But then again, like, I was always questioning and, you know, to like not see anything that's happening in 2020, you have to be like actively fucking avoiding it. Like that's a big difference. So I guess it matters what you're talking about, but yes, to a certain extent, I have empathy for all these dumb bitches walking around shopping because they're just so worried about like image and doing things the right way and having their house and having the right car and having their kids dressed the same way, you know, cause I lived that and I had that pressure and I was there and I have lost friends because I'm not like that anymore. You know, I don't live in the neighborhoods that everyone lives in because I, you know, didn't want to do that. Or I wanted, you know, a house in a different side of town. Or so, yeah, I have empathy, but also I think it's just laziness. So I think it's just a fine line between someone that's just never been exposed to anything and it just has so much pressure on them versus someone just being lazy and not giving a shit, like what the fuck their money is.
Right. Do you think, you know, I want, forget about voting with your feet and where you can, the choices you can make personally, but in the greater scheme of things, do you think times are different today than before? You know, I mean, parents have, and people have always been basic, and a lot of people have always ignored a lot of issues. States have always seized power, and state's going to be a state. But do you think things are getting worse on a certain scale, or? And do you think that on a greater scale, you know, aside from voting with your feet, that we can even make a change?
You mean like ignorance wise, like getting worse?
People's reaction might be the same. I'm wondering if people are still just being ignorant or naive to the situation. That's always been the case. I don't know if they're getting more ignorant, but I don't know if people have always been in tune. And I wonder, is the state getting, you know, exponentially worse, or is the state, you know, just being normal and things aren't like great, doing what they do. And the scale is really just feels worse maybe to us because we think about these issues and we want to make change and we want to help create awareness. You know, but maybe people have always existed like us and we're just like bringing sand to the beach.
No, I think everything's worse. I think the state is where, I mean, the state's always been fucked up, right? I mean, like, who in their right mind thinks that the 2020 election was the first rigged election ever? Like, let's be fucking honest, right? Like, so shit like that. I mean, since like, I don't know, the 19, like 40s, I guess, is really when the state, you know, started like meddling and shit. So yes, but I think it is getting worse. I think like ever since Obama made it fucking legal to just propagandize everybody, I mean, the media is just like a fucking retard child on the loose. You know what I mean? Like no one's putting them in check. They have, there's no, you know, they can just say whatever they want. So, and I had actually a really genuine conversation with my boomer basic mom, right? Mm-hmm. She's like, Clancy, when I was growing up, when you watch the news, of course there was bullshit on the news and, you know, all that. But she said, but you watch the news and they reported information. You know, like this is what happened, you know, and of course there was like, you know, false information given occasionally or whatever. Sure. But she was like, you know, now it's all based on like opinions and it's so, politics is woven in it. And politics has just been woven into everything. And it's just a product of shit money. And she's like, it's so hard for me because I'm like, mom, that's on the news. You know, you can't listen to what they're saying. Don't watch the news. And she, it's so hard for her because her whole life, you know, that's where you get your information from. So there's this like disconnect with boomers because they're so confused because everything is, that's, you know, the news reports the news, but that's not what happens anymore. Right. So like the news is getting worse. The media is getting worse. And then of course, like social media, the internet has just fucking amplified everything. The state is getting worse. The propaganda is getting worse. The money is just being printed worse, worse, worse. And then that causes, you know, all this like woke leftist cancel culture. So that being amplified makes everyone be fucking pussies and not say anything about their opinions ever because people can't be, you know, it's cyclical. Like people are just so scared to be canceled. So I think it's just a product of fiat and everything is just getting so much worse that there's a tipping point. And if you don't see it coming soon, like you're in for a rude awakening. So I think it's just a trickle effect of like all of these things getting worse. And so I think, yeah, there's always been basic people out there, but now it's so, you know, frowned upon to speak up like that. You just, you know, like my mom's super traditional and she hates that I speak my mind and I'm vocal about all this stuff. Because it's really hard for her because you shut your mouth and you just do what you're told. And I'm like, fuck that. I'm not leaving the world for my children the way boomers left the world for us. Mm. So yeah, it's just all getting way worse and we have to do something about it.
Yeah. Well, I think we should turn to a little bit of Bitcoin. And I'm kind of curious some of your opinions there and your takes on maybe what Bitcoin's going to do, not for the individual, over the next 5 or 10 years. Do you think Bitcoin is going to change the world in some regards over 5, 10, 20 years for maybe people who aren't aware of Bitcoin right now?
Yeah, absolutely. The same, Joe hates when I use this word, ripple effect, but I'm not letting ripple ruin ripple effect because it's powerful. Yeah, the same ripple effect that happens with like fiat money that has given us like the product of all this bullshit culture that we're in now, it's going to be the opposite for Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin, it's if you get past trying to understand, you know, wrap your hand around like blockchain technology and how it works and security and all that, if you know, you step back and look at it and look at the bigger picture, it holds everyone accountable. And I don't ever think anyone in history has ever had to be held accountable because of something like this. And I was on a Clubhouse the other day and a guy was asking, he was kind of a newbie and he was asking about, you know, like how do we get past people saying, you know, it's too late and they're too late to get in Bitcoin. All these whales are already in. It's too late. It's the same thing. They're just going to be poor like it always is. And I was trying to explain to him that like the fiat mindset is so hard to get out of. Mm. But once you understand like what Bitcoin is, and it's so much more, it's an ideology rather than just like a currency, right? You have to reframe your mind around like what money is and what it does for the world. And once And I was trying to, I'm like, yeah, like rich people are rich. And yeah, their stack's going to be bigger than yours. But with fiat, like the rich stay rich and get richer and the poor stay poor, if anything, get poorer. But with Bitcoin, that's not going to happen. Like it holds everyone accountable. So it holds you accountable. And your mindset has to switch from this like constant motion of being suppressed by something. And once you, it's hard for people to shift their minds out of some, you know, he's trying to understand it in the sense of like money, but it's not money. It's like a revolution. It's a change in the world and the change in the way people think and a change in the way that the economy works, but people's everyday lives, you know, like people are going to be able to, I think it's going to shift culture because people are going to be able to focus on what they love. And also they're going to wake up because there's a lot of people I know that, you know, like I know women that have 4 kids and a job and a husband and a house to take care of. And, you know, like they don't make a bunch of money and they literally don't have time to think about how fucked up the world is, much less like all this mass bullshit and this COVID. Like people are so tired and they're working so hard, you know, they're just slaves to the dollar. And so like, think about if that shifts, if you can actually save money and have real money, hard money in your bank account, and you can actually look up and breathe and think about the world and watch what's happening around you. And that's exactly what the state doesn't want to happen, but that's exactly what's going to happen. It's only a matter of time. Like they can't fucking stop the signal.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And it was really interesting. I loved your piece in Bitcoin Magazine about the Walmart, the inevitability of the allocation to Bitcoin. I don't know if that's soon or, you know, far off, but can you walk us a little bit through your thinking there? And I think that's, you know, I think it's it just kind of shows that for me, the underlying subtext was kind of getting at what I hope is that aha moment for a lot of Americans.
And that piece was, of course, you know, not based off of fact. It was a total like, what if, playful, like, but also like, you know, realistically possible.
Yep.
Idea of what could happen if, you know, a large corporation adopts Bitcoin or adopts the Bitcoin standard. So basically I just talked about like, you know, I can't remember how big the Walmart company, $154 billion company. It's just something crazy like that, right?
Yep.
And people think, you know, Walmart, it's like a grocery store, but it's so much, you know, they're in, you know, like 20 plus countries and their online presence is huge. And so I just talked about how effect of them not only holding Bitcoin reserves, but then also them seeing the benefit of it. And then and what's interesting is when I published that, or when Bitcoin Magazine, it was in Bitcoin Magazine, they published it. The pushback I got was when I said, because I was just saying, you know, they're going to adopt it and then they're going to start, soon people are going to start saying, pay me in Bitcoin. And I got so much pushback on people saying, why the hell would a company pay people in Bitcoin? And I was just, I had this mindset like, all right, well, if you know, a corporation buys in Bitcoin right now and they grow, say, I don't know, their stack grows 250% in a year, then they're literally paying people at a discount. They have, their bags are so big that people are requesting to be paid in Bitcoin. Why wouldn't they offer it? Because they are literally paying them, you know, however much percentage their bags have gone up less in Bitcoin. There's things that are going to unfold that we can't even like imagine yet because it hasn't happened. And I mean, there's a million different scenarios that could happen, but then I started talking about, you know, if they start doing it and if you walk in Walmart and Walmart has a, you know, like you can pay in Bitcoin and get paid in Bitcoin, what would that do? You know, that's Walmart is essentially like middle-class America, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that's ultimate exposure and for Americans at least. And yeah. You know, because all these small countries are benefiting from using Bitcoin, but people in America, they don't fucking pay attention. They don't know what's happening in the economies around the world. If you don't like actively seek out world news and you're American, you are a fucking dumbass when it comes to global awareness, right? I mean, like, it's not their fault. We're never exposed to it. And if you don't seek it out, the government doesn't want you to know what's happening around the world, you know, because America's number one and we don't need it. It doesn't matter. We're the best country in the world. So, if you're just a dumbass when it comes to anything else. But once you see, you know, these are real people, like, like what Strike's doing. I mean, they are like feet on the streets in all these small countries showing people how to transact in Bitcoin, not using banks, not using, having to go through regulations. But people in America, they don't really have to worry about that shit. So the exposure fact is different. And it's kind of scary because it's like America could be the last to adopt, honestly, because they're so clueless about what's actually happening in the world.
Sure. What I found really interesting about it is just that the notion that what's happening in corporate America right now with any sort of allocation to Bitcoin just is not going to, you know, seep into middle America. And, you know, I kind of want your take on how different America is from state to state and whether we are becoming more or less different over time going forward.
Okay, so how do you mean? Like,
well, right now, I mean, it seems like I feel like in one regard, we're going more the same, that we're just having this incredible ongoing federal or national conversation, it seems like, that's endless, whether we partake in it or not, or you or I do. It seems like it's an ongoing national conversation that I don't remember having endlessly before.
Right.
In one regard, we're kind of becoming one thing or one conversation and one way. And yet I think, you know, you go from state to state and people are incredibly different. And even within a state, people are very different between the cities and the suburbs and the rural areas. So
it's interesting. It sucks because like all this, you know, this conversation goes back to 2020 every time, just because shifted everything, right? Like our world will never be the same. We will never, I hear people talking about, we just want to go back to normal, everything, you know, I just want to go back to the way things were. And I'm just like, you're out of your fucking mind. Mm-hmm. If you think we are ever going back to any sense of, you know, of normalcy.
Right.
So I think that I'm from Arkansas, I'm from the South, right? But our state is super blue and it's super odd. It's so odd, you know, because everywhere you go, we are thankful that we're in the South just because we tend to be more Republican states. But it's interesting that you say that, because even when we went to Austin a few weeks ago for a guns and Bitcoin conference, Austin was like, it was like California, because of everything that's happening, the influx of people from California have pushed so far, so much into Texas, everyone's left. And a bunch of people have gone to Texas, and Austin has always been super liberal, but it was just like a whole different world. So I see what you're saying. I mean, everyone, I feel like if we don't do something about it, what you're saying is going to happen. And we are all going to turn. So like what you are saying, how you feel like that's happening, I feel like it hasn't quite happened yet, but we are on the cusp of it happening. And if we don't do something about it and push back or wake up, that's going to happen. And eventually everyone's just going to be fucking zombies. So
yeah, I don't even think it's a red or blue thing. I think the pendulum will continue to swing back violently as a tool against the state from one party to the other, so that they can create a lot of fear on one side and then repercussions and consequences when the pendulum swings back politically and so on. I think we're in for another 6 to 8 more years of turmoil, but it just seems to be that it's going to be 24/7 for the next 6 to 8 years on a national dialogue rather than just events playing out. And And yeah, and I'm not sure what happens at the state level and whether, you know, some people talk about the union not surviving. And, you know, I've never really had to think about that in my lifetime before.
I think that is, I think it's totally plausible. I think that they're the only end to this. And this is sad because, you know, we all like meme about how being, we're watching the world burn, you know, maximalists are just like enjoying the ride because, you know, we have Bitcoin, but I think there's no good end to it. I think it has to crash and burn to, I think it's going to crash and burn. I think the only way to get out of it is to crash and burn. I mean, what other way out do you see other than it? Because it's, we've just gone so far off the rails that I don't know how you could start. I don't know how you could go backwards and undo the damage that has been done. Right. Hopefully not undo the damage that's been done on the state's part on waking people up. You know, hopefully that continues, but what's happening now, it doesn't look, you know, like the, there's still momentum. And it's not stopping. So I don't see any way of everyone just waking up one day and, you know, moving backwards. Think everything's getting worse. Yeah. And you're right about the politics. I mean, it doesn't matter who the fuck the president is. We're still going to be bombing people. We're still going to be printing money. You know,
right.
It's just like putting makeup on a pig. You know what I mean? It's just, it doesn't matter who it is. The same shit's going to keep happening until it crashes and burns.
But it is interesting. I do think that some of the areas that some places will change, I think, over the next few years, like maybe Austin or Miami. And I think there'll be, and I do have a lot of optimism just from Bitcoin alone for humanity. And therefore, I'm hoping, you know, this is more of a gradually than suddenly with, yeah, things continue as they are. And hopefully that's sort of like this boiling the frog thing for another 8 years. And then somehow Bitcoin, not as just financially bigger, but more culturally, there's a huge cultural awakening.
But then what, like, what do you mean? How does something like this boil for 8 years and not crash and burn? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
how does it get better?
Well, you know, I think that there's, you know, and I hate to go the nationalist route because I don't really believe in nationalism as a metaphysical existential thing. But I think, you know, in years 5 through 8, if the United States government adopts a Bitcoin standard, you can have things go from gradually then suddenly better. So it's gradually getting worse and then it suddenly gets better from a nationalistic, you know, all boats rise with the tide kind of thing, rather than the whole economy crashes and a new economy that's better is reborn.
Right.
I'm hoping more for scenario A. I'm not a prognosticator or futurist.
Right.
You know, but it's interesting. I mean, I love conspiracy theories. I think we've become conspiracy scientists.
Oh, definitely.
The thing for me, though, is I've never really, and when I say found truth, you know, one of the things I was getting at earlier in the conversation is that you can have a narrative that is more accepted by the majority, or we want to call it mainstream narrative, whatever it is, or the general narrative. And it was an interesting conversation on Twitter today, where the opposing narratives doesn't necessarily, if you don't believe in the mainstream narrative or you question the mainstream narrative, maybe you don't know if you believe in it or don't, and whatever narrative we're talking about is, it doesn't mean just because you question it that the other narrative is true. Or narratives, or that you know which one is true.
Yeah.
And that's where with Bitcoin, before Bitcoin, I never found truth. You don't have a lot of historical truth verification or political verification machines. So in Bitcoin, I've found something that I could, you know, what maybe appeared to be something that could be a scam or a conspiracy at first. And I found it to be true. And it kind of bends the world to truth for me. And that's why, and I wonder for you, is there been anything pre-Bitcoin that you still kind of one particular or many conspiracies that really kind of you still kind of chasing, or have they all been thrown away and they're new things that interest you now, or do they just come and go and they're kind of like what's interesting at the moment?
Oh man, well I guess it matters how far down that rabbit hole you want to go, because I can go all the way. But I think the most relevant one has just been, I don't know how you can call some of these things conspiracies anymore. I mean, what is the definition of a conspiracy when you have facts? You know, how are you going to call something a conspiracy when there's just facts and evidence to back up something consistently? Mm-hmm. And so just because, you know, the mainstream narrative calls it a conspiracy, you know, normies just keep calling it a conspiracy. So anything to do with the government is just time and time again, there's just the facts are out there. And I tell people all the time, if you want to find something out, all you have to do is look. It's literally in front of you. There's a little something called the internet, and all you have to do is look. You have to actively be trying to not look, to not see some of these things. So, I mean, I don't know how far you want to go into it, but just anything that has to do with control and, you know, opposition to the truth is considered considered conspiracy theory, which, you know, I just don't know how much more. Everything that happens, I just like everyone on Twitter, we're like, how is this happening? How are people still, you know, people just, it's an ego thing. They're just going to die on their hills. It doesn't matter how much truth you put in front of people. They are just going to have to die on this hill because their egos are hurt so bad by something being true. Or maybe it messes with their worldview. I don't know. But it's hard. It's just really hard and laughable to me that people can still consider, you know, all of these things conspiracies. Now, if you're going to go down like the damn alien rabbit hole, that's different, right? That's, you know, it just gets real touchy and people get all, you know, you'll be having real level-headed conversations with people and you bring that shit up and they're just done, you know, like they can't handle it, or they're just like, that's bullshit. Nope, I'm done. Not going to talk about it. So when you go down that way, you know, it becomes more, less money and more like power and spiritual warfare. And that's where people start to get uncomfortable. Which that is actually, to me, those kind of conspiracy theories are the ones that I keep coming back to every time. It's like, you know, like Bill Gates, right? I mean, the man has more money than God. What else could he need? What the fuck is his problem that he has to just keep fucking with people constantly, right? Like, what is it? And you have to stop and ask yourself, like, what is it? You know, like, and they just announced today, like I got on Twitter today, him and Melinda are getting a divorce, right? And I was just thinking and talking to Joe about, like, this is just proof that money does not mean prosperity, right? Like money and power do not bring you prosperity. And it's so much more than that and bigger than that. Like, this is a battle ultimately between like dark and light, and, you know, like, and if, you know, if you start to go down that and you really start to listen and step back and listen to everything and really look at it with a expanded perspective, everything goes back to that, because all these people that are in power, all these cantillionaires that are just printing, you know, they just get, it's not money that they want there. It's something else. Like, there's something else more to it. And that's like, it's scary when you start to think about that and you start to look at the facts. And it's really fucking scary to people to think about, like, you know, like all these Satanists and all these theories about people eating babies and shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's scary, but really that ultimately that's what it comes down to, because money is not what they need more of. So what else is it?
Right. But aren't those longstanding eternal issues? Or I'm not saying aren't those, meaning I'm saying in terms of if this is what, you know, you believe in, is this a new thing? you know, in terms of,
Yeah.
Okay. And then my question here then in terms of conspiracy theories of the other side of the coin is, you know, someone's if a narrative is being controlled, is it there's separate narratives that are just certain entities want to control, or is there like more of a singular entity trying to control all these narratives?
Okay, so you're asking my opinion on this. Are you sure?
Sure.
I'm just kidding. Okay. Well, okay, here we go. Okay, so I believe in what I listen, I'm a podcast freak, okay? I read everything. I do laundry and listen, and I will plow through some podcasts, right? Like I've gone to the edge of the flat earth on podcasts, right? And back. So I've just filled my mind with so much bullshit, but also so much knowledge, right? And you just got to take everything with a grain of salt. But when it comes down to it, I mean, there's too much connection between all these like major world leaders, right? I mean, like they're all like take the election. That's just a really basic, easy example to use. Like they're all in cahoots together. They're all in it together. They're all helping each other out. They're all cheating each other. You know, it's to think that everything is, you know, and especially 2020, how can the world coordinate such a fucked up plan? Right.
Yeah.
And it's like the weirdest thing. It's like everyone's hypnotized. Everyone is just like, accepting the same, and all these, you know, it's all trickling down from the top, though. Everyone's saying the same narratives and trickling out the same narratives and saying the same things to the people. So it's got to be, I mean, if you use logic and look at it, conspiracy theories aside, if you use logic and facts, it has to be bigger than just like individual countries all just happen to feel the same way about fake facts. You know, it just has to be something bigger. So my belief is that it's absolutely, you know, like, I don't know if it's a group of people. I don't know if it's like, you know, you can go down the societies sure. rabbit hole, all that. But I absolutely think that it's way bigger than just like our government and their government, or you know what I mean? It's so much bigger, and it absolutely has to be a group of people that is larger than just like a group of nations.
Mm. Yeah, my mind is bending.
I mean
it's all places that I've gone before in my thinking, but you know, I don't usually it's very interesting stuff.
And it's scary. I mean, it's scary to go there. I mean, not for me at least.
No, I don't think it's scary to go there. I think, you know, it's in today's current environment, it's you know, it's dangerous territory.
But it's also today's environment, literally the most logical conclusion.
Right.
Like they're doing it to themselves. They're fast forwarding hyper-Bitcoinization. Like, thank you, government, for being the ultimate advertising for Bitcoin. Everything that they do is just pushing everyone to freedom. You know, like, the more you suppress someone, the more they're going to crave freedom. And, you know, I'm an American. I'm in, you know, supposedly the freest country in the world, right?
Mm.
And I have never in my life felt so trapped inside of, not only just like in my house and like, I need to get out of here, but, you know, around the holidays, I really started to feel a lot of suppression. Like I couldn't go anywhere without being exposed to it. Everyone talking about it. It's affecting my family. It's affected all my friends. Its tentacles have reached into every single part of my life. And it's really, and if it's doing that to me and I'm an American, you know, imagine what it's doing to people in countries that aren't as free as ours. And like all these countries are these people getting beaten in the streets for wanting to walk their dogs outside. So it's overwhelming. And I don't see how, go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's, I think on that front, I agree with you. We're not going back to normal. I don't think that exists. I think any, you know, this temporary stuff is permanent. You know, I think that I'd like to think that the Bitcoin Renaissance will, like I said before, help us figure a way out through this. But I do see the next one this year. I think in some ways I'm waiting for the other foot to drop and this year to be worse than last year in a lot of ways. And I don't know how that's going to play out, but.
Well, next is going to be the environment. That's right. The next
and energy. And yeah, yeah. And that'll be the war against Bitcoin as well.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know. I feel like recently the FUD has been squashed so hardcore that I'm like, what are these people going to come up with? I mean, I don't put anything past them because they're all, you know, completely retarded, but like the media is just going to, they can take anything and run with it. But recently, like all that stuff came out, like the, you know, the guy from CNN, some girl caught him on video talking about, this is our next narrative, you know, got him drunk. And he's talking about, our next narrative is the environment, and we are going to push fear that the world is ending. Like, literally, what could be worse for you to fear than the world completely ending? So but also you have to look at, like, their cap, you know, they're maxing out on what else to try to scare us with. I mean, there's war and terrorism, but like, come on. If you still believe that we are in war over terrorism, you are out of your fucking mind. Like, if you think that we have a presence in the Middle East because we are protecting our homeland from terrorists, you don't have
that. Right. So we still have the war on drugs, though. We still have the war on terrorism. So I believe we're going to have the war on germs for another 20 to 40 years.
Oh, for, yeah?
Yeah. That, I mean, that's the way I'm kind of framing up the current environment. And, you know, and then the war on energy that you're getting at is I think part of the larger war against, you know, self enjoyment. So anything that you do that requires energy, quote unquote, is, you know, selfish.
Yes, but also Bitcoin fixes this.
Right. But the war is not going to be framed that way. The narrative will be against Bitcoin.
Right. So, but, okay. So also like let's look at the exposure that Bitcoin's had so far. So let's say Bitcoin is held by 2 million people in the world. I mean, roughly, right? Mm. That's like 0.1 of the world population. And literally every day you turn on the TV. Well, Joe likes to troll me in the morning by turning on Squawk Box and just triggering me really early. So he turns it on and they're always either flashing on the screen or they're going to bring it up somehow, or they're going to bring up some shit coin or something. Right. And they're talking that, okay, that's the news, right? So every day there's more awareness, every day something happens and there's more exposure. And that's just one more person that's going to download, start stacking sats, start seeing the light. And as that exposure grows and grows and grows, you know, like if you take Bitcoin out of the equation, I think what you're saying is, yes, we'll be like, I think we are on that track, right? But I think stay on that track on your war against energy or consumption or war against germs. But then, you know, throw in the Bitcoin awareness, like, how is that going to counteract that? Which way are we going to shift? Mm. When are we going to shift? So just like you were saying earlier, like, you think, like, if we can gradually incorporate Bitcoin into our economy, maybe we won't crash and burn. So, you know, it's like a fine line that you're walking with that too. And it's just so unpredictable, you know? And I think just, this is why it's so important for people to be toxic, because it might sound shitty sometimes, but even bad exposure is good exposure for Bitcoin, because the second people hear it and they have to look into it and question it. Even the FUD, people are like, oh, Bitcoin's blowing the oceans or whatever the FUD of the day is about it killing the planet. People are hearing it and listening, but they're also paying attention and it's exposure. It's just like any celebrity, right? Mm. Like, any exposure is good exposure. So the quicker you can expose people to FUD, the quicker you can prove the FUD wrong and move on to the benefits, right? So exposure is exposure, you know, and Bitcoin doesn't fucking care. It doesn't matter. Like, it's not going to stop. It's not going to, nothing people say about it, write about it, is going to stop it and or change anything about it. And it's ripple effect of freedom on people's minds and people's lives and jobs.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really hopeful that that comes faster than you know, slower. I do think, you know, and I'm really torn. The eternal optimist in me just wants to see it happen as fast as possible. The cynic in me thinks, I think the gradually then suddenly is that, the suddenly is Bitcoin in terms of the cultural effect, and that we gradually just keep going and grinding through what we are now for a while longer. And institutional adoption to me in the beginning doesn't necessarily translate into cultural adoption and renaissance yet, and that kind of optimism. But we'll see. I'm super excited. I want to find a reason to be optimist.
Right. Okay. So speaking of being optimist, I have something like super dark and negative. Okay. So something when you're asking me about conspiracy theories, I don't know if this is necessarily a conspiracy theory, but it's more spiritual. But something that keeps coming up in my mind a lot lately, and something that I've seen people talking about. Have you seen any threads of people talking about the mark of the beast and the rise of the digital currency and what that might lead to?
No.
So there, if you know anything about, you know, Revelations in the Bible, it talks about the mark of the beast. I'm sure you've heard that before.
I've heard that. I'm not familiar with the full
right.
The fleshed out story here that we're getting into.
All right. So this is relevant, I swear. Okay. So what it translates to from the Bible is the it being on the mark of the beast being, I think the literal translation is like a picture on a coin is what I think the literal translation is to. And it talks about people knowingly getting the mark of the beast. And this mark of the beast, unless you have this, you can't like buy or you can't buy anything, or you can't spend anything, you can't transact in any way. So it has everything to do with currency and everything to do with our monetary system. And it's a really interesting take on it, because what you see unfolding and how, you know, the vaccine passports have come up and people are like, oh no, it's not the vaccine passports, because you have to. Supposedly you have to knowingly get the mark of the beast. You have to know that it's from the darkness and you're getting it anyway. But I think it's really interesting that this, if you think about this in the way that the world may shift and people and governments creating their own currency, their own digital currencies, and trying to get their people to use their digital currencies. I think it's a really interesting perspective, and I suggest people to look it up, because it's a really interesting way of seeing how things may unfold. Not necessarily the most positive way, but really interesting, because everything that it talks about, it seems to be unfolding. So I think what's going to happen is, after, you know, Bitcoin does get tons of exposure and people do start adopting it, what governments might eventually do is just try to create their own digital currencies and force people to use theirs. So then that's going to be another battle that we're going to have to fight again. You know, we're going to have to get over that hump, because it only makes sense that will be their last grasp of control. What else can they do if people start adopting Bitcoin besides regulating it and trying to force people to use their own currency? Yeah. So it's just a little knick-knack, a knowledge nugget for you.
Definitely puts a different twist on things. I definitely think there's definitely a battle out there for, you know, the soul of the people. And I think fiat is at the crutch of that battle, along with Bitcoin. And I think obviously Bitcoin's going to win. I just don't know, you know, how that plays out in terms of, you know, how that affects everybody, you know, whether that's individuals can save themselves on the life raft, or the boat will be there for everybody and lift everybody up.
Yeah, I think it depends on where, I think it's going to have to depend on where you live and how your country tries to regulate it. which is the sad part. You know, some people are trapped. They can't get out. Or, you know, if all this vaccine passport shit happens, people are even more trapped. Or if, you know, like, it's just more control. So if something doesn't give, I think it's just going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah. And I just don't think in that scenario, Bitcoin does a lot for you if you're physically kept within a certain geographical space.
Yeah. People get out now.
Yeah. But where do you go? You know, I think in that regards, if things go along those lines, it's going to be a stay and fight kind of thing.
Yeah. We got to go to the fucking moon to escape this.
And I wonder, you know, are we in a cold civil war already?
Absolutely. I think we're in the beginning of it. Absolutely.
And what does that mean? How does that play out? What does a civil war look like in today's times?
I feel like it's already, I mean, right now it's just with information. We're in this information war right now. You know, I mean,
right.
I mean, okay, so like leave Bitcoin Twitter, leave the echo chamber and take a
That sounds horrible.
Yeah, I know. Dip a toe into normie land, right? Just dip a toe. Go in there and just try to just challenge anyone's thought on any perspective, right? On a mainstream narrative perspective. And it just becomes a war of who can send links to what and where and whose sources and this information. And it ends up just being this, it's just information overload. So now there's so much information, so much information for people to absorb, but also like so much more access for the government to insert false information. So now it's just a war of information. Like what is right? What is wrong? Who can you trust? Like, how do you verify something? Because then you find out like, oh, this person is, you know, comes from this person. This person's in the umbrella company and this umbrella company is owned by the fucking Clinton Foundation. So it's like this war of information of between like you and the internet almost, if that makes sense. Like I can get in an information war on anyone on Twitter, but like who is really winning this battle in the end?
Yeah, well, when I was on political Twitter before Bitcoin Twitter, I felt like a casualty of that war, and I don't think I ever want to fight a war like that again. I don't know if it's incumbent and our responsibility to fight these information battles. I'm just not sure.
I think it goes back. I mean, I just think we have to rebuild the internet. I think we just have to do
right. Well, that's where Bitcoin comes in, and Lightning, and Start Nine Labs and Sphinx Chat and these technologies that I hope will be the beginning of, I don't care if we call it Web 3.0, I'm not really a big fan of that, but just a decentralized communication channel or channels.
Yeah. And speaking of my, like the truther community, conspiracy theorists now call themselves truthers because now they don't have conspiracy theories to talk about anymore because they've all been proven correct and unfolded.
Doesn't that have a negative connotation in some regards?
What, truthers?
Yeah. I mean, we're going down. I'm not familiar with the vernacular and what has, but I thought like in some regards in mainstream narrative, that would be a negative connotation. I guess maybe we should own the word.
Yeah, it sounds like you got a little programming going on there, Sid. Of course anyone mainstream is going to think truthers are crazy and have a negative connotation because they're literally screaming I told you so to everyone. So like they've written books about things and they've literally unfolded in 2020 and 2021. But what's interesting about them is, you know, the censorship issue has just gotten out of control too, right? So all of these guys who have podcasts and have this huge following have been like banned on YouTube. They're getting banned from Apple Podcasts, banned from Twitter, banned from fucking Facebook, of course, because that's just ultimate normie land. And so they're getting banned from everything. So all these guys I've listened to all, you know, there's like, all the podcasters, they're all kind of in their group, kind of like Bitcoiners are. Everyone kind of like talks to each other, knows what's going on with each other. And so all of these guys have figured out like they're going to have to run their own servers. And they've literally started to rebuild their following and their channels and their content on their own servers. They've had to figure it out. And these aren't, you know, these aren't technical guys. it's easy to say that to a technical community of Bitcoiners, like, bro, you know, like run your own server, you know, like run your own, like run your own node. But these guys are just, you know, like normal people that are just being so censored, and they're fucking frustrated and fed up with it. And they are just, you know, like using the internet again. The government unleashed the internet, and it's just a beast that's reared its head against them, because now we have all this access to information. So all these guys just started running their own servers, and they're spreading it. They're like spreading this knowledge, and it's gonna, I mean, it's gonna all, you know, eventually trickle out from there. But these people are doing it. They're off. They're not on YouTube anymore. No one's watching YouTube that is wanting actual information. If you want to find information that's like not mainstream, you're not going to fucking find it on YouTube or from Googling it. If you still use Google and YouTube, you need to throw your phone in the fucking ocean, because you're not going to find any information on there that's correct. I mean, it's just, it's nonsense. So these guys, I mean, they figured it out and they're doing it. And these are not technical people. So it's happening. Like, it's out there happening. It's just going to have to, it's going to have take time to, you know, take effect, but it's definitely happening in a non-technical group of people. And it's beautiful to watch.
Yeah. I can't help but tip off on what you said about the internet has been turned against governments. I think that might be true on the individual basis. And I struggle with this, but I think at most levels, the internet has been turned against us as a large group, not you and I as individuals. But I think the internet has been a very powerful tool for the states against the greater masses, us included in that, whether we individually notice it or not. I think that kind of makes me pessimistic. I just think that the internet, like you said, it's an information war. And even if you're fighting it, you're still subjected to it. I do think that, you know, toxicity is great for art. It's something that I hadn't really seen until 2018 or 2019 in Bitcoin Twitter. And at first, it's something that, like, you might not agree. I think it's designed for you not to agree with it at first, or to make you angry at first, or to just be striking. And I think that a lot of great art comes from that, because it's not designed to just make you feel good or to appeal to your lowest common denominator, but to make you think. It's expressive. Yeah. And I think some of it even takes me a long time to come around and see what the artist is saying, or the artist's point of view, whether I agreed the whole time or never agree, or usually come around and do agree. But I think that's a sign of great art as well, because it makes you think. And I do think that you kind of have a handle on that on Twitter. And I think I see less and less of that on Twitter these days, especially in the bull market. And I think we still need sort of that. It's the immune system for Bitcoin, I believe.
Yes, it's the white blood cells of Bitcoin, is the memes and the toxic art. But I think that high time preference art has infiltrated society and is the fucking devil. I mean, it's sad, you know, like, I think people don't even understand how to appreciate low time preference art. I mean, I'll have people in my family request me to do them a piece of art, and I'll get excited, you know, okay, let's talk about it. What do you want to do? What are you thinking? What is it for? And, you know, they'll like whip up a picture from Pinterest or the internet somewhere, social media, and it'll just be, you know, like some black squiggles on a canvas. Which is not, I'm not saying that's not beautiful. I mean, that's cool. And, you know, if that's like the look you're going for, whatever, but it's just everywhere. And I even worked at a really high-end design store where, you know, we had, you know, a lot of really wealthy clients that would come in, and you would design their house from the ceiling to the floor, drapes and all, you know, and the art, and we had, you know, original art in there, and people would bring it. We had original artists coming and bringing in art, and it was just like, you know, get some paint and splash it around, put some squiggles on it, and, you know, $5,000 right there on a piece of art. And I'm not saying that those things can't be beautiful, but I just feel like there's a lost appreciation for low time and for low time preference art. But also, this is also a product, a negative effect of the internet as well. I mean, you can look at anything, you can print anything, you can order anything, a print of anything. So it's the reared its ugly head goes both ways, right? Like, just like you were saying, you know, it's giving us information and access to everything. But in that, I think you lose appreciation for things that you wouldn't often see. Like, for instance, when I was in Chicago, for instance, my sister took me there for my 30th birthday, and we went to the art museum, and I was so excited to go in there. And I walked in, and I mean, I'm an artist, right? So I can appreciate fine art, and I love art history. I love all of it, right? But I also love modern art. I can appreciate all of it, if it's, you know, worth appreciating, of course. But when I saw, I don't know if you've ever seen like the Monets in person, but I'm sorry.
I maybe have, but not that I recall.
They're okay. First of all, they're huge. I mean, floor to ceiling, wall to wall, they're huge. But they're, you can stare at a Monet all day, every day on the internet and say, oh yeah, it's so water lily, it's beautiful. But seeing it in person is a different experience. I had like a breakdown when I saw it in person. You know, I got super emotional because there's just something about it. There's something about someone creating something and putting their heart and soul into something and the appreciation you have for it. And you can be anyone and walk in that museum, and you have to be dead to not feel it. So I think there's just this lost appreciation for beautiful things that take time and low time preference art. And that is actually something I struggle with, you know, like creating things digitally, because I'll spend a lot of time perfecting something and making it beautiful, when really like memeing is just about like cranking out art, you know, making it funny, cool. The quality doesn't matter. So I struggle with it because I know there's a place for it and I have an appreciation for it. But also what I truly appreciate is, I think, what is a lost art of really low time preference art. And that's like my sweet spot right there.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm also wondering, I agree with everything you said there. And I'm wondering, in a Bitcoin world, where would you live? You know, so things are great and you could live anywhere and there wouldn't be sort of any concerns about the government or anything. Where would you live?
I would probably live where I live right now, which is in Little Rock, Arkansas. I was born and raised there, and I've left. We moved to Texas and lived there for a little while, and I love Texas too. I really love it there. But I love Arkansas. It's perfect. It has every season perfectly. It is just big enough, just small enough. It's probably, I don't know, it's the most natural you can get in the South, I feel like. I mean, East Tennessee is beautiful too, but I feel like I would live exactly where I am. I'd probably buy a Citadel way out, but I'd be exactly where I am right now.
Do you think the South gets low time preference a little bit more innately than the North? And in that regard, and
no, I think no matter where you are, you have shitty low time preference buildings. I mean, we went to Nashville recently, and what Nashville, there's like this boom of these container buildings. It's actually really sad. I mean, Nashville is this beautiful city, and there's just this surge of buildings that are literally just like prefab containers, and they're just putting them up everywhere. And I don't mean to like shit on Nashville, because I think Nashville is wonderful and beautiful. I think it's everywhere. I think, but like in Little Rock too. I mean, we have.
But I meant in like a perfect world. So now even, you know, I mean, like meaning so, you know, in a better, on a Bitcoin standard, so now, you know, you have a choice still. And yet in the South, I wonder, and or is it just really you would stay where you're from, or are there specific qualities about it that, you know, would even shine more in a Bitcoin world?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think, you know, I'm from the South, so I'm biased, of course, but I think tradition is a big deal where we are. doing things traditionally seems to be lower time preference. Not that modern things can't be low time preference, but they just tend to not be, right? So like ideally where I live, where I see myself living, I see myself building a citadel that takes 15 years to build because we do it like out of fucking limestone and have true craftsmanship and have, you know, like carved stone and doing things low time preference, the right way. Just like, you know, like we have these old buildings that are hundreds of years old that are still standing in great shape because they're not made out of fucking wood and metal and tin. So yeah, I think there's something to say about like being in the South and it being a little bit more traditional. I'm not saying that there's not traditional things in the North, but tradition seems to be more prevalent in the South. Building wise, at least.
Yeah, I hear you. There's more space, which has really grown to appeal to me lately. You know, maybe I'll move to the South one day. We'll see. I've enjoyed this conversation tremendously. You know, I've been looking forward to it for a while. I did want to touch on one tweet you had about falling in love with Mr. Joe Rogers.
And okay.
When you did, he was an unemployed beer salesman. I'm going to let you know that's just unemployed and drinking beer. I'm not sure what he told you about the salesman part about that.
No, he was.
I'm an unemployed NBA player right now.
Oh, hell yes. He was a beer salesman. And then he was laid off from being a beer salesman.
I hear
you. So, that's funny. Actually, funny story. So everyone, you know that I didn't marry Joe for his sats, right? So I was in this before the sats existed. Yeah, he was a beautiful, unemployed salesman who hated the fucking state. And I fell in love with him.
Yeah, well, we talked to Joe episode, I think it was like 24, about 3D printing, guns, and Bitcoin.
Yes.
Yep, and definitely check that out. And I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed our conversation. I'll leave the mic to you for any parting words and definitely let know people where they can find you and buy your art.
I don't really have like an art web page set up yet, but follow me on Twitter. Anonymous BTB. If I do get anything set up, it'll be linked to my page. I would say just stack sats and stay fucking humble. I feel like people are coming out of the woodworks and stay humble, stack sats. That's about all I have to say. Stay fucking humble. Don't be a bitch.
Word. Thank you so much, Clancy.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, it's been so good talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Clancy Rogers on Conspiracy Scientists, The Mark of the Beast, Basic Bitches, and How Bitcoin Will Hold Everyone Accountable, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix Podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dig the chats, make sure to subscribe, share, and learn. I have so many amazing guests lined up for the rest of the summer that you won't want to miss, no matter how hot it gets. Stack sats and stay humble. This is said. Peace.